Do you think life is simpler as time evolves? For some, it can be more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. Do you think that you're ready to retire? You know, Jill, everybody says they want to retire.
Right.
But, you know, if you really pin them down and say, so tell me what plan you have in place to assure the next 30 years are going to be sustainable.
Yeah.
And it could be more than 30 years. We don't know.
Yeah, people are living longer, of course. But do they really have that plan in place? And I bet many people don't.
I'm willing to bet that many people have planned better their family vacation than often they do their retirement. It's like the bell has rung, you know, at the school. You're about to go into your summer vacation. You're waiting for the bell to ring. The bell rings when you're in high school and you charge out the door. And then you get outside the door and over the next weeks or so, you're trying to figure out what to do. Not that, incidentally, summers are a miserable experience. I think most people agree that they can
have my favorite season, of course.
But the point is, in this case, this is not about just the summer. This is about the balance of your life.
Right.
In this world, at least.
Well, that's true.
We'll leave to another show discussion about how to plan for your life beyond
afterlife. Right, right.
So what should people have thought about? Now, I'm willing to bet if we were to stand on a street corner and just randomly stop people, we'd only stop people that we think are over, say, 50.
Okay.
And say, so tell me what your plan is for retirement. I think we'd get a lot of wildly varying answers. And the point is, those fundamentals should not be wildly varying. Even though people are in different circumstances, they have different income, different assets. But the fundamentals, just like building your career, the fundamentals are the same. You can have lots of different careers. You can do lots of things differently. But the path to professional or financial success is very similar on its most fundamental level. So I would argue that people don't really know what the essentials are when they think about retirement.
And what age would you recommend that folks start planning?
Well, of course, it's going to correlate to how well they've done financially, or maybe put a different way, how modestly or strictly they're willing to live in retirement. Have you heard of this thing called FIRE, F-I-R-E? You see this acronym? They're all capitalized, F-I-R-E. Some of you may have seen that appear in articles. You'd see it online, websites.
Yeah, I'm not real familiar. What is that?
It means financial independence, retire early. This is a sort of movement among people in their 20s and 30s. Now, we might look at that and think that it betrays a certain arrogance that you can think you need to work for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, you've had a pretty good life. Most of our kids have. I sense some nodding heads out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Our kids have had it pretty good, better than most of us. And so they get through college after having a good time, perhaps in college as well. And the idea that you would work for 10 years and then say, man, I'm glad I'm ready now to retire. What a career I've had. It just doesn't seem proportional. And should I pick on millennials? I try not to pick on millennials.
Oh, come on. Why not? For the show's sake.
Yeah. I mean, not every generation could have been that presumptuous. But there are a lot of people. You'll find this concept floating around commonly on the internet, this idea that this is a realistic thing and we can do this. I think that to the extent somebody can work very hard and achieve financial independence sooner than later, I think is marvelous. It shows ambition.
It does.
Et cetera. So I'm not questioning ambition. I'm questioning the presumptiveness that I think is often unrealistic.
I was just going to say it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 years, come on. And I don't think I'd want to retire after working for only 10 years. There's just so many things, you know, I know when I was at that age that I wanted to do, and I'm glad, there was no way I could retire, but didn't have that kind of financial success. But, yeah.
You didn't have a rich uncle?
Well, not one that liked me that well.
Oh, yeah. No. It's much better to have rich parents.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't count on rich uncles. I can tell you that some of these people, in fairness, let me say this in defense of this FIRE, F-I-R-E movement, is that many of them intend to live modestly. So most people who are advocates of that are not thinking that they're going to write a piece of software, create one of these unicorn companies, mm-hmm. and ride off into the sunset with $1 billion. I think most people who are advocating this and who aspire to this are defining retirement in a very specific way. They're probably, many people have heard this phrase, minimalist. Minimalists are people who are following this philosophy that we have too much stuff in this world, and that you can have a more meaningful life if you don't accumulate stuff. So many of these proponents of minimalist living will, for example, not own a car, depending on where they live. That may be realistic.
Right.
They will often have there's this one guy who has a website. How many articles has he had? It's an odd number. It's like 153 articles. Or 241 articles, something like that.
Sure.
And the point of it is these are the objects that he owns in this world. And so he takes pride in that. So that's the name of this website. So it sounds a little silly, but at the heart of this, let me say, in the defense of millennials, is there is a little bit of that's a little bigger, a little more popular among millennials than perhaps it was among their parents.
Right.
The idea that, you know, success isn't defined as having more stuff. It's being happy on less stuff, and that's success. So this whole FIRE movement, retiring early, is not so crazy if you think about it from the standpoint that I intend to live very modestly. I may or may not own any real estate. I may or may not own a car. And my clothes will be limited, and I will travel cheaply. I'll stay in things like hostels. Things that, quite frankly, I wouldn't be willing to do. I suspect many of you listening wouldn't be willing to do. But my hat's off to that. So I understand that. And let me say this also. Some of what they're calling retire early really means some sort of gig, a gig that allows them to be anywhere to do it. They do it on their own time. There's lots of these things around where you provide some sort of service that you can do remotely. Often it relates to technology, but it doesn't have to. It can be writing.
I was going to say it sounds more like some type of technology.
Yeah, or writing. Industry. I mean, there's lots of stuff really. Sometimes communications roles can be done remotely. Sometimes I've even heard of management roles, believe it or not, where you can be available to answer questions and whatnot on a limited basis with some types of businesses. So this FIRE movement, another thing I will say is that it does reflect having to do a whole lot of planning. So it's not the arrogance that it sounds like that you might first think, that I still tend to think is true of some proponents. But I think if it's qualified the way that we just talked about, I think that it can be, you know, a realistic goal.
Sounds like too much work to me, honestly.
It does. And who wants to live that frugally?
I know.
I mean, it's one thing to not be in favor of waste. It's another thing to be determined to use as little of the modern world, as few of the luxuries as you can. That's not my goal. My goal is to be able to afford as many of those luxuries to some extent.
And to be able to enjoy life. And incidentally, I did have an uncle that was very frugal like that and, you know, denied himself a lot throughout life. And guess who got his money? His kids.
So he had kids.
He did have kids, right. And, you know, but how he denied himself so much in life and did not get to enjoy and always drove, you know, the old beat up lemon car.
Yeah. That's the extreme side, the less attractive side of the millionaire next door. I mean, if the millionaire next door is that, and sometimes in a significant percentage of the cases, I believe, it fits that profile. But now if people can enjoy doing that, and I know these people who, to them, it's a game. It's a challenge. They love it. You know, they will talk for weeks about a vacation that they managed to pull off at maybe a 2-star hotel and some Panamanian airline or something that I wouldn't want to travel on, but they're so proud of it because they managed to pull off this trip spending, you know, maybe less than $1,000. So if a person truly enjoys that sort of challenge and living their life that way, who's to criticize it?
Right. it's not for me, but if someone else, hey, have at it.
But those people who, they don't simply save for a rainy day. They save, so they're saving for Armageddon. So they're hunkered down, you know, they're in this bomb shelter, and they're saving every nickel they can. They're continually looking for those ominous clouds on the horizon. This is like Eeyore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they spend their careers with that mindset, and suddenly they're old. They're no longer in a position to enjoy some of the things they may have fantasized about
right.
at one time. And they may look at with some regret at the fact that they've accumulated these assets and that they may wish they had enjoyed them. So that, I don't want to be that person. The whole idea is to be frugal, but to regard money as simply a means to an end, not as an end. And
mm-hmm.
and the means means to assure you get value, but to derive some enjoyment in life. But that'll look a little different to all of us. So whenever you talk to about financial planning or you talk to a financial planner, you know, it is really important for them to ask their client, tell me what happiness looks like to you over the next 30 years.
Right. What you want your retirement to look like.
Yeah.
How you want to live on a day-to-day basis.
I would argue, though, that the fundamentals to get to that point where you can have that conversation should be very similar. So while there's lots of room for movement to the left or right side of the road, there are guardrails about planning that would indicate you can't go any further to the left or further to the right. That would
mm-hmm.
be wise. So, but it is a road that has multiple lanes, but it does have guardrails. And we can talk a little bit about what some of those guardrails should be, things that are kind of universals when you're thinking about retirement and wisdom and the potential for happiness, whatever that happiness is going to be. And among those is the savings plan. People often don't fully take advantage of the huge gift that 401k matching is, not to mention the tax benefit, even in the absence of the matching, whether it's a 401k, whether it's IRA,
right.
whatever tax-deferred option there may be. I mean, those things are marvelous engines for growth.
And I think a lot of people think of it as, well, I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to wait till later. And then they never do. But why do you think that is? There's that procrastination with participating in 401k plans.
I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of the marshmallow test. You know what I'm talking about?
The marshmallow test. No, do tell.
This is a famous experiment done many years ago that has been done multiple times since. And it's regarded as one of the most predictive tests available for distinguishing people who will be successful in their careers versus not. Now, this is not a matter of intelligence. It's really just trying to identify those people who have the ability to defer gratification. So
okay.
when you say, why is it that people aren't willing to save today, that instead they have the idea that maybe I'll do that tomorrow? And some suggest it's a temperament thing. I suspect it's learned a little bit, but I think some of it is a matter of temperament. So they had a bunch of kids, and they brought them into this room, and they had marshmallows there.
Big marshmallows or little ones?
I think they're big marshmallows.
Okay, like yeah. for roasting.
Yeah, juicy, right? It had to be something that you thought a kid is going to want to eat, right?
Okay.
So let's assume the kids all loved marshmallows, right? So the person leaves the room, and they've since done this with other stuff, but the common denominator has to be something that the kids will find very desirable, right? So
most kids like marshmallows, sure.
The person doing the experiment says to all these kids, says, now, I'm going to leave the room for 10 minutes. Now, if you want to, you can eat your marshmallow now. But if you don't, when I come back, if you haven't eaten yours, I'm going to give you another. And so it sounds like a simple experiment, but it turned out to be hugely predictable about these kids as adults.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, the ability – The kids who could say, boy, I really want that marshmallow, but I'll wait. And it may have been 30 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
it's enough. But the point is it's sitting there and the kids are there.
It's enough
and they
of
can
a
see
temptation.
It.
Sure.
Yeah. So their eyes are on it. And since then, this experiment has been done in slightly different ways four or five times. They're well documented. And the results are very mm-hmm. revealing. So it seems that people who have the ability to postpone gratification, call it defer gratification, then they seem to do better in life. Because doing better in life, whatever it is, I mean, whether you're learning a trade or you're going to graduate school or you're saving money for something or you're exercising. Exercising is deferred gratification. It's saying that, boy, I'd rather watch this TV program now, but I know if I go to the gym, I'll have these benefits in the future.
Yes.
And I'm willing to get up from the couch and go do something I don't want to do because it promises something better in the future. So really all of life, if you think about it, those of us who find that we do stuff we don't want to do, we tend to do a little better than if we hadn't.
Right.
And all of us listening know people who didn't do that. I think
or people that want shortcuts. You come across a lot of people that want shortcuts in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the kid who's thinking that he can eat part of the marshmallow and turn it around so it's facing differently. And the person who comes back in the room will think they didn't eat the marshmallow. And this is funny. They had videos on these kids.
Yeah.
And there are kids who did all sorts of things. But there were kids who actually did that, who would nibble on it and turn it around. So we all want shortcuts. We want the benefits of deferred gratification, but we want it today. So I think whenever people are thinking about retirement, more than just the point you raised about saving money, really that point applies more broadly. Because when you think about all the things you need to defer gratification about retirement, I mean, this is the ultimate deferred gratification test, if you think about it. All the other things are really subservient to this positioning yourself for the most vulnerable and maybe the longest period of your life. If you break your life into compartments,
right?
You know, the period when you grow up, the period of your early career, or maybe you stretch it to your active career, which for many people is no more than 30 years, sometimes is less. Could be more, but it's not unusual for it to be, say, 30.
30, yeah. That sounds about right.
But here's the point. It's not unusual for your retirement to be 31, you know, or 32 or 33. My point is, retirement can be not only the most vulnerable segment in your life, the thing that you gotta get right, but it can be the longest. And this is the one that everything is leading up to. It's the last.
Yeah.
So if there's anything that's going to get shortchanged on deferred gratification, it's not going to be the first because you don't have to defer as much. Second, you don't defer as much. If you're saying, what is the most challenging test of my ability to defer gratification? It's the thing that's most in the distance.
Yeah.
And what is that? Retirement. And so I think that people think, well, I'll have some opportunity that will come along the way. Some count on inheritances that never come.
They do, or, you know, those who fantasize, oh, I'll win that lottery.
Yeah, yeah. And there are those. And then there are those who simply say what you said a while ago. I'll start that next year.
Yeah.
I'll start it in 2 or 3 years. But it's really a precarious thing when you think about how ominous it is for
yeah.
this big chunk of your life, this big, most vulnerable period of your life, for things to go sideways as to that.
Yeah.
And to think that it's so important and it gets relatively little attention is scary. And I think that we could spend more time in the educational process, particularly on a college level, communicating to kids that this is important. You know, we talk a lot about your career, hopefully, depending on what your major is.
Right, right,
you might
right.
not talk about your career at all. But assuming they talk about their career, then I think that that's the time to kind of get their attention and sort of, you know, appeal to the fact that as important as their career is, there is something more important. And their career serves that more important thing. It's not as if it's in a different direction.
Right.
It's in the same direction
that
as their career.
That would be a good required course for college students.
Yeah.
Taking a course on retirement. Because, again, mm-hmm. I think a lot of us put it off into the distance.
Yeah. And when we're talking about this topic, we've got to include a couple other things. I mean, so let's try to get through 4 or 5 of these today.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about, are you ready for retirement?
So we know that the overarching theme is you've got to be willing to defer your gratification. You've got to be willing to recognize how important that this subject is in your life, how monumental it is. So taking advantage of tax-deferred opportunities, huge, done. That box has to be checked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's relatively easy because it's not biting into your lifestyle that much. What else should we think about? Well, we should think about, particularly if we're talking to someone who's over age 50, we should think about, Do you intend to continue working in some capacity? Because that dramatically changes the numbers. If you're talking to a financial advisor
right.
and they calculate that perhaps you'll need a pot of money of, say $1.5 million. Now, some can retire less than that, but it's not unusual to need a significant sum of money to subsidize your Social Security, et cetera.
If you're going to live another 30 years.
If you're going, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Somebody might be able to say, yeah, but I'm in good health. I think I'll probably be in good health for at least another 10 years or so. I don't have any indications otherwise. I don't have type 2 diabetes that's become an issue. I don't have this cardiovascular disease, all those things we might have concerns about. So then you do a different calculation, and suddenly the pot of money that's required could be half of what was needed.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might keep the same pot as an objective, but you don't pull the money out at the rate you otherwise would, which allows you to have a higher standard of living in the latter segment of your retirement. So huge is that question, do you plan to work? Now, remember, it doesn't mean continuing your same job. There may be a few of you listening who enjoy your work so much that you would continue doing the same work. I think that's a minority of people. But I do know them. I have a number of friends. Many of you, some of you listening may fit this profile. You're happy in the job you're in. You've been there all these years and you don't want to go. So what you're doing is you're reducing the amount of reduction on your retirement fund there would otherwise be. So it's hugely beneficial retirement. I can tell you the way the math works, every additional 5 years you work has this 15 to 20% impact. I mean, it's a significant calculation adjustment for every five-year period that you continue to work.
Are you referring to what they will get in Social Security or their pension or their investments?
Those calculations is kind of multifactorial. What that means is it includes the impact on Social Security. It includes the impact of compounding on the fund of money that they would otherwise have, assuming there's compounding for an additional 5 years.
Okay.
So they're in it. And it also, in fairness, it considers the fact that there's a reduced five-year period on their lifespan that they'll be drawing from it. So when you put all those factors together and do the math, it's a dramatic, more than 20%, 21, 22% increase for each five-year period. So as your ability to enjoy and fund your lifestyle is defined.
And I think a lot of people do want to continue working, maybe not at the job that they've been at for the past 30 years, but getting a part-time job. I mean, how many times do you go into Walmart and you see a senior citizen working as a greeter at the door? And they find that very enjoyable.
And I think that most people do fit that. While there are people who want to stay in their same jobs, I think most people want something different. I think that they like the idea of striking out on a new adventure in
mm-hmm.
life or what will become an adventure versus where they were.
And so, something that's not as demanding, I would think.
Maybe not as demanding. Maybe just very different. You know, it may be that if they're in jobs that are stressful, then they want to get rid of that stress. It might be that some, though, who have sat at desks will like the idea of being able to be outside.
Work outside. You know what? I do know somebody that's their plan when they retire is to work with landscaping, to be
yeah.
outside. And I can see that because this person had worked indoors, you know,
mm-hmm.
at that desk job. And
that can be a very lucrative gig. I mean, people who retire and start landscaping companies,
and
also know somebody who's done that as well in Tulsa, Oklahoma, he's very happy, and he's commented to me that it's been a hugely profitable thing. He thought it was just going to be a side opportunity to make a little bit of supplemental income,
mm-hmm.
and now the amount that he makes from it is substantially more than he would ever get from his other assets.
Sure, because of word of mouth.
Yeah, yeah, he's turning down clients.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
So that sort of thing, when I was young, I worked in a hospital when I was an undergrad. And
you did? What'd you do?
I did. I was kind of a nurse technician, they called it.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a glorified orderly. I did a few more interesting things. But, you know, it's funny. I look back fondly in those days, and I remember at that time that it was common for older people to either work in a paid position or volunteer. But I've thought since then, you know, that was a job that I enjoyed doing, and you know, you interact with people, you
right.
get a chance to be helpful, get a lot of exercise.
Gee, oh, yeah.
I probably walk 20 miles a day, I think. But I mean, things like that. I mean, the list is endless of ways in which you can choose to make money as an older person and doing something that will contribute significantly to your retirement funds.
You could be an Uber driver.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very lucrative.
And there are a lot of people doing that now that are over 60. So this changes the calculus entirely on what you need to retire. So while this is huge, though, the fact remains that you don't know that you're going to be in a position to be able to do this. So you do have to hedge your bets a little bit. It's a little risky to retire being entirely dependent on these new opportunities, especially if when your new job is going to be earning you substantially less than what you have now. So it's a little bit of a gamble, but not a lot. I mean, once you hit 60, I think it's reasonable to think about this change because you want to have this most enjoyable period of your life be as long as it can.
Right.
So rather than arguing in favor of people working and working and working at their standard career job to be sure that they're sure that they can afford retirement, I lean in the opposite direction. I think that they need to get to the point where they have reasonable confidence, not certainty, reasonable confidence that they can make the change. Because for every 3, 4, 5 years that you spend additionally working this job in order to buy this 100% certainty, you're sacrificing years of your retirement that would otherwise be, I'm going to venture to say, much more enjoyable.
Right.
So you're in a way burning some of that precious time in order to have money for years that you may never see.
Well, yeah, and you think those who have the increased stress, they're staying at that job, and that can, of course, affect your health.
Yeah, and it's not irresponsible at all. And I disagree with financial planners who suggest that you want to achieve this incredibly high level of confidence that all your I's are dotted and your T's crossed. I disagree with that because I think that there's something that you have to consider on the other side of the scales. If the scales had one side, and that one side was being certain that the money you need for the balance of your life is going to be there, that's all the only thing we want to consider, then it's true. You would do everything you can. You'd work until you had a heart attack at the office and mm-hmm. left this world because you would, in order to achieve that level of certainty, you're going to continue working and doing things that are not consistent with your happiness but are consistent with this goal. And I suggest that go ahead and recognize that there should be something on the other side of the scale. And on the other side of the scale are quality of life, the fact that these years are precious, the fact that we don't know how many of those years we have.
Right.
And that each year goes by is 1 year short, whether you retired or didn't. So I suggest that there are hugely important quality of life issues that would suggest that the optimal solution is one in which you assume some risk. You assume some risk in exchange for the opportunity to have a longer, more enjoyable retirement. Not a reckless gamble, but some assumption of risk.
Yeah, I think so. And you got to look at things too. If you're, say, struggling to pay your bills and you're, say, 62, then maybe 65 isn't. Unless you can get your act together within 3 years. But
yeah.
I think that's something you also have to look at.
It is. And there are people that, even by my definition, which is more liberal than perhaps the definition of some conservative financial planners, even by my definition, that person has to keep working. I mean, there's just no exit door from mm-hmm. that situation. Social Security won't do it unless they are like this minimalist lifestyle on steroids.
Well, yeah.
If they want to live this monkish sort of Spartan existence, okay, maybe you can do it on $600 a month. Good luck with that. but for the most part, I think there are people who get themselves painted in a corner where it's just there are no happy solutions. And that's the thing about deferred gratification, circling back to that theme here, because it is a good theme when you talk about planning your life, especially retirement, is some things you can't fix. Some things you can defer so long that they're no longer fixable.
Right.
And I'm using defer in the sense of postponing doing the right things. So some things that you can keep pushing off until tomorrow and you can still, just go into a frenzy of activity and somehow pull it off. And that's the way some people approach retirement is they postpone preparation for retirement. and they live for today until they get, say, 50 or 55. But then, you know, to their credit, in 55, they get it. They have this epiphany. They become this whirlwind of discipline and activity. And sure enough, they're given the health they need for the period of time they need, and they arrive at age 65, and miraculously, they're prepared maybe to commence a retirement, a reasonable retirement with or without some supplemental employment.
Sure.
So there are people who can pull it off at the last moment that day, just like the New England Patriots, for example. I mean, sometimes you can make it happen at the last moment, but you certainly don't want to count on that. And there are people, though, who just arrive in their 60s and suddenly they have this recognition that this is a crisis and it's really too late for them to have a meaningful retirement anytime soon.
Right.
Now, they may still be blessed with good health and still have a marvelous several decades, one where maybe they switch jobs to jobs like we were talking about a few moments ago that they enjoy a lot. They may find that their health stays good and they don't have a problem with this employment at all.
Right.
May even contribute to their health for all we know. They may get some funds from other sources, maybe inheritances and whatnot. So sometimes people can pull this off even when they don't start till the end. And I like to be optimistic and believe that there's always ways to improve the quality of your retirement. But you and I would both say, Jill, that why put yourself
in that situation,
that frantic, desperate fear that has to accompany that situation? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because that's a procrastination that can be disastrous.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a few minutes with Elder Talk.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
We're back with Elder Talk, and we're talking about some of the critical components that you need to think about as you approach retirement. We don't have enough time on this show to cover all of those, but the good news is that it's not as if there are hundreds. There aren't even tens. But there are maybe 10 or 9 or 8 fundamental components that need to be there. And now, you know, today we've really talked about kind of the cash flow piece, looking at the extent to which you have accumulated a nest egg that's going to be sufficient in your retirement and
right.
the factors to consider whether you need to supplement that with planned employment, how, of course, health is a factor. Et cetera. But there are consequences to continuing to postpone your retirement because you're fantasizing about having this even longer, even more self-sufficient retirement period because we don't know how long we have. And that's the reason that there actually is a balancing test between continuing to work or do something that you're not perfectly happy with versus going ahead and assuming some risk. A risk that you might live too long.
Right.
And I guess among things that go wrong with my plan, I'd rather that I live too long than too little.
Yeah. And remember in a previous show, we talked about that we can assume if we hit 65, according to studies, we're going to live another 20 years, 25 years at least.
Yeah, yeah. And these are just demographic facts that we know. And we know that there is continually being progress made to advance longevity.
Mm-hmm.
This is not pie in the sky, but I think it's hard for many of us to acknowledge that as a factor on with respect to our own longevity because, after all, human beings have been here for a million plus years. Even those who don't believe that will concede we've been here 10,000 years. And the bottom line is for someone to suggest to us that there's going to be a development in science or technology, such as has been promised innumerable times in the past, that's going to extend our lives and
right.
as a result, our retirement. We just tend to be dismissive. And I get it. We're justified in being cynical. We've heard it so many times before. But I have to tell you, I watched 60 Minutes last night. I've been reading on this subject. David Sinclair, researcher at Harvard University, is hugely influential in this area. He's written a book called Lifespan that I encourage you read. There's just a lot coming out from research now, and some of it relates to the Genomic Project. But I think people who think that it's silly that they may live longer than what would be predicted at this point by, say, 10 years or more.
Right.
I think they're being too cynical about the capabilities of science today. Things are moving faster than they ever have before.
Certainly are.
So now we're talking about a period that's longer than it would otherwise be. But it doesn't mean longer in suffering. It means, I like the phrase, health span. So
quality of life.
Yeah.
Having good health.
That's what's important. No one wants to live longer without those things.
Right.
So we'll use the word health span. It may be that it's very realistic that somebody today who is 60, certainly younger, a little less likely if you're 80 that you'll see this. But if you're 60 or younger or maybe even 70 or younger, there's a good chance that you'll see something come along that will solve what might be the primary threat to your living an additional 10 years from what you otherwise would have, whether it relates to diabetes, whether it relates to cancer, heart disease, whatever the genetic risk that you might have. There could very well be a solution that is actually is given FDA approval, goes into effect, and suddenly you find that, whoa, now my $1.5 million nest egg has to carry me another 10 years, because with the medical solution doesn't come additional money to compensate for this these additional years. The gift is the years. You figure out how to pay for it. I think that it still requires a balancing test. There are people who go off on either side of that road. There are those who are so intensely future-focused that they go out of the world with this much-imagined, wonderful, utopic even retirement, never having seen the light of day.
Right.
It's remained a fantasy in their lives, and they continue to work and work and work. They have a heart attack when they're 67. They go out of this world. And I just think that to avoid being one of those people, and we're all potentially one of those people, we can all be taken out of this world at a time that's before we would have thought based on our planning, based on what experts tell us. So I argue, back to a point we made before the break, I really argue that you push back a little bit from those who advocate a plan that requires this 100% confidence level that you are capable of funding every year of a long life. There's just too many unknowns and other priorities that you have. So one thing, though, that is a factor that needs to be considered, we've not talked about it, but you've got to insert an inflation factor. We know historically that inflation factor has averaged between 4 and 5%, depending on the decade.
Yeah.
And there have been periods, of course, those of us who are old enough to remember, when inflation was, 18, 19%? I mean, there were crazy periods.
Sure.
Interest rates shot up to 20% on credit cards. So the inflation rate, depending on how you define it, but we've seen it definitely go into double digits in this country. And I think that had Volcker not taken the very draconian actions that he took as Fed chairman in the early 80s,
right,
had he not taken those steps, then we could have been in the situation that these South American countries are in today,
mm-hmm,
you know, with this runaway raging inflation for which there's no cure on the horizon.
Yeah, no end in sight.
Yeah. So I think that while we don't need to plan on double-digit inflation, I'm not at all inclined to see the world in those apocalyptic
Let's
terms.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, but at the same time, I do think that it's reasonable for us to expect to have inflation substantially above where we are now.
Right.
If we're looking for an anomaly in history, this is the anomaly. Depending on how you define inflation, there are different definitions. The Consumer Price Index is commonly used, but the Fed doesn't use it because it doesn't incorporate the things that the average person fully uses. So there are other metrics out there, but depending on which one you use, now we're maybe around 2%, possibly less, mm-hmm, possibly 0.5% more. This is an anomaly historically. I don't think that you can plan your budget based on that. So here's the impact just superficially. So let's assume that you have 4% inflation. And let's assume that you're counting based on your withdrawal rate from your funds, whatever that lump sum is. Let's assume that you're assuming you'll earn 4%. And your desire is to not invade the principal, perhaps. So that means that you need to earn 8%. To have the same purchasing power. So you can see how the inflation factor dramatically increases the amount of money that you have. If you needed $1.5 million at 4%, then you need $3 million at 8%.
And these are all things that you need to discuss with your financial planner, your estate planner.
Before, though, you see this as a hill that you can't climb, I think you need to refine the inflation number a little bit, because the inflation number assumes that all costs are going up. And a big component in the inflation calculation under the Consumer Price Index, at least, is a calculation for housing costs. Well, your housing costs may not go up if you have the ability to fix them. If you have a residence that you've paid for example,
right,
then that's a cost that won't continually go up. Maintenance will go up, but you may do some of that yourself.
Your real estate taxes that you have to pay every
year,
you have to keep that in mind.
But clothing costs, I mean, it's a big cost of somebody during the course of their career. Well, that may be frozen. I mean, if you have a nice wardrobe of nice stuff, you don't have to go out and buy new clothes every year in your retirement. And so there are the opportunity to eat at home more than you would eat out.
Mm-hmm.
So people who – and I know certified financial planners who suggest that you simply take the consumer price index number and you add it to the rate of return that you want. It's simply not accurate when you do that. You've just got to do some refinements based on things you know about your lifestyle and your circumstances. And it may turn out that maybe for you the inflation factor will hit you at a 50% of what it would affect someone else.
Yeah, and you mentioned like your clothing. That's a cost that would go down. Other costs would go down once you retire. Say
transportation costs.
It's exactly what I was going to say. Transportation costs. You're not going to be spending as much on gas, maintenance on your vehicle, because you're not going to be running it as much, most likely.
And you know, some people retire inside communities, gated communities, or they move into cities. And they live in circumstances where, quite frankly, they intend to keep the car parked.
Yeah.
90% of the time. Because one of many people's goals when they retire, certainly my wife and I think about this, we want to be in a position where we don't have to drive, or at least drive much less than we do now. So don't blindly take as a additional hill a projected inflation rate that you might otherwise have paid attention to. You have to take that rate, and then you have to adjust it for your circumstances. So there definitely needs to be something for inflation. I concede that.
Yeah.
But it might not be what it appears to be.
Right.
What else, when we think about things that people have to focus on in retirement, we have a few minutes here. I'd like to talk about what debt is going to be out there that they need to service. Some people are able to get on this soon enough to where they can eradicate that debt by the time that they retire. Others, it's simply not practical. There are alternatives to that. There are ways that you can extinguish that debt that doesn't require that you sell your home. We've talked about reverse mortgages on here before.
Yeah.
And I talk about them advisedly, meaning they're definitely not right for everybody, but they are right for some people. And people who are having to service debt, then why not instead convert that to a debt that you don't service? And that's kind of what a reverse mortgage is. But it's really asking bigger questions about your life. In order for you to say that, yeah, that makes sense to me, I'm paying on credit cards or other shorter-term debts, whatever they might be, I'm paying maybe $2,000 a month. And let's say that their home is paid off. So they can, if they want to stay in their home, it's not their plan to sell their home. It's an important factor. It's not a plan to sell their home. Their plan is to stay there. Then why not simply borrow that money to pay that off on the house, pay off that debt, you freed up $2,000 cash, and you don't fill it. Now, nickel has to be repaid on the reverse mortgage until you pass away or you move out of the house permanently.
Right, right.
So if you move out of the house, often that's okay with many people who have reverse mortgages. They get it. So if you move out of the house, say, in 5 or 10 years, then what happens is that money will have accumulated a rate of interest. You'll know what that is. And you can do that math on the front end. You will have accumulated interest. That'll be paid off. And after that, the money, whatever's left, it goes to you. So it's not like selling your house. It's literally placing a mortgage on your house in which you don't service it until you pass away for most people.
Yeah, and that's very, very different. But ideally, you want to have, by the time you retire, your debt out of the way. You don't want to have a mortgage. You don't want to have huge credit card bills.
Lingering student loans.
Yeah.
I there are people who They simply look at these abstract economic principles and they say, you know, it makes sense logically if we extend this out as long as we can. And there are people who continue to pay on student loans for 30 years. But I have to say that there's a psychological component that doesn't make it into the arithmetic. And that's that even if you're paying a rate of interest that is relatively low on that,
yeah,
it just means that you're living with risk over your head that you should probably eradicate. So all those loans, I mean, I agree with Dave Ramsey. I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan in terms of his conservative approach about debt. And his position is you shouldn't have any. And when people call in, as they do periodically, and they'll argue, yeah, but if I can borrow money at a rate that's below the rate of return that I can obtain on an investment, then mm-hmm. I'm essentially arbitraging that difference. And doesn't that make me clever? And don't I make more money? Well, in a classroom, and sometimes in the real world, incidentally, but certainly in a classroom, you study those arguments in finance majors and in
sure.
economics. But Dave Ramsey's argument is, look, I'm not questioning the arithmetic or the financial theory. I'm questioning the human behavior. And I'm also pointing out that life is very unpredictable. And what is clearly the right choice in a vacuum of perfectly rational people is not transposable to the chaos of the real world, where you have people who are very flawed, people who are borrowing money that may not have the discipline to pay on it, about whom they can't know what lies ahead. For example, people who may be facing catastrophic illness or all those things that life can throw at you because
right,
of the fact.
Unexpectedly.
Yeah, these are all unpredictable factors. So Dave Ramsey simply takes the position that, look, let me suggest something else. Let's take the position that all debt is bad. Let's get rid of it. And that way, if we do, as a consequence, maybe fail to earn a few percentage points that we might have earned
right.
in another scenario, that's okay because that's more than offset by your peace of mind and the certainty that your money's going to be around longer than it might otherwise have been. So I'm a fan of paying off the debt as soon as you can.
I think that's wise advice.
All right. Time is gone. I hope that this has been helpful to you. Another week has gone by with Elder
You've
Talk.
You've been Until listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future with attorney, CPA, Joe Cordell. Please listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.